The following program contains heavy spoilers, deep insight, and absolutely no filters. Listener discretion is advised. Trump's on film. Trump's on film. Trump's on film.
Trump's on film. Welcome to another episode of Snobs on Film. My name is Arthur, your host, and I'm joined with Isaac and Jahan. And I'd like to welcome Karen Gabbe from BBC Manchester Radio. She is the co-host of The People there in Manchester. And I do believe, Karen, you do have television in Manchester, right?
In cinema? We do.
Okay. Okay.
We do.
Well, you know, Jahan was, he like just bought a television after, you know, a long, long, long hiatus. And so
I
just want to make sure that everyone understands the box and the bulb and programming running through that from time to time.
Mate, I feel like this was my issue and not the whole country's.
That's good.
Well, there are...
Let me just be honest about it.
There are a lot of people in my world who do not have televisions either, actually. So you're not on your own there, Jahan. But I do have one. I work in TV as well, so I need to have a TV.
Yeah, it's a bad running joke that I have.
Yeah.
So I'll just go ahead and retire it with this one. But we wanted to get into a serious subject for this episode. No news has rocked Hollywood here in the U.S. harder this fall than the sexual harassment and sexual assault allegations, beginning with an article written by Ronan Farrow, who's the son of Mia Farrow and Woody Allen, about producer Harvey Weinstein. And that has caused a domino effect of a series of allegations from both men and women alleging that several top names in Hollywood of misconduct that's happened most recently and also well into the past, some spanning even 30, close to 40 years. Not only has this news cycle been continuously filled with fresh accusations against the well-known mogul Weinstein, but controversy surrounding Harvey Weinstein has seemingly ignited a firestorm of these similar allegations against powerful men, both in front of the camera and behind it. And all of this has raised a question that no one seems to be in a hurry to answer. Where is the line that divides the forgivable from the unforgivable? What is it about now, about 2017, that makes potential victims to now speak out seemingly without any fear?
Well, I think you can start with strength in numbers. One lone actress coming out, especially an actress or an actor who is not in a position of power, coming out against somebody who is in a position of power, there's always going to be that you know, fear of repercussion. You know, is this going to ruin my career? Even before my career has gotten started. Now what you're seeing is similar to what happened with the Bill Cosby incident. When you see so many women coming out, and in some instances, men coming out, there's strength in numbers. So it feels much safer because it's like, hey, I'm not out here by myself. So I think you can start with that.
I also think because of apps such as WhatsApp, and we've got Skype and Facebook, that once someone does come out, people are quickly messaging each other because it's, you know, there's a trigger. And once people, you know, message each other via those routes, within minutes people can realise that, you know, I identify with this story and I can speak out too. So the number of people coming out comes out quicker, and then therefore people do, as you say, feel the strength in numbers rather quickly. People, you found with these incidents, people aren't having to wait as long because they're like, 10 people have spoken out, now I've got a voice, now I can do this too. So I feel that social media and these apps also are helping people to feel more validated quite quickly in sharing their story.
I think maybe this is an opportunity to, and I think that's, you know, maybe some of these actresses and people have come out against some of these men. I think they've taken the opportunity to do this. this is the opportunity to not necessarily look at this on a micro level, but to look at this on a macro level and look at how these things became possible. How did this culture, how did this culture of abuse even, how was it made possible, and how did it spawn? You know, how did it continue to grow and become the norm? And I think once you do that, and you look at American culture in particular, and Western culture in general, you see that we have our culture is built upon patriarchy. It's a patriarchal society. So I think that some of these people are taking this opportunity to say, hey, this is not just about getting rid of this one person or, you know, centering this one producer. This is about tackling this problem and trying to eradicate it, or at least begin to eradicate it on a mass scale.
Do you think that studios will police this or begin to police this? I mean, speaking specifically of, say, Kevin Spacey, who was fired. I mean, first, production had halted on House of Cards, the new season of House of Cards. And then days later, it was revealed that Kevin Spacey had actually been fired. Now, he carries the show. So production companies, networks, and studios, you know, clean house first and then ask questions later. Do you think that that's a sign of a shift in the attitude?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, that would be brilliant. But I also think it's only natural to wonder whether all the moves that we've been seeing from these production companies and studios, whether that's just an attempt to kind of stop the reputational bleeding here, to save them on the public relations front, rather than actually affect any meaningful, long-lasting change. So Netflix fired Kevin Spacey, Louis C.K. got fired by HBO, and Netflix also said they're no longer going to do anything with him. Harvey Weinstein got ousted by his board. But these are all limited to only reactionary measures, unless the companies change their own policies, holding everybody who works for them to account for their actions, and also putting stuff in place to enable these actions to be identified when they happen. Now, it may have been lost on me due to all the traffic, but I haven't seen any announcements to that effect. And like Isaac's saying, in terms of changing things on a macro level, that's the kind of measure that's necessary, because otherwise this could all regrettably get relegated to a flash in the pan status. And inevitably, stories move on, topics change, there's a different focus in the public arena. So now, with kind of the eyes of the world on this this area at the moment, now's the time to capitalize on that awareness and public attention and get companies to make these changes.
I'm not sure that they know what to do. I think that they got rid of those people quickly, because there's even more to come.
Right,
and we've
right.
learned that in the UK with Jimmy Savile. We've learned that in the US with Bill Cosby. The reason why they act quickly is because how many people were told inside that organisation about what happened? What's clear, I think, sometimes in these organisations is there are clearly some people who don't know what's happening, because they're the people that, if they do know, will blow the lid on it. But also there are people who know what's happening, and all they're concerned about is ratings, money and the star. And also sometimes it's because they don't think there's anything wrong with that behavior either. It's endemic in these organizations. They don't know how to change it. So the easiest solution is to fire. I mean, it's even a question about, you know, do you rehabilitate at all in any of these cases? But it's easier to fire and then hopefully move on. I think what they're finding now is that the repercussions are so wide because people in other industries are also identifying with this behaviour. So this may prevent them from not just having the feeling that they can just move along, because politicians are raising their hands, business women are raising their hands, gay men are raising their hands and saying, look, we're harassed too. You know, all of these things are happening that, you know, are causing the next headline, you know, in a different sphere, not to come along because, you know, so many people are affected by that. But I really don't know that these organisations know how to deal with it. Nobody knew how to deal with Bill Cosby. It took a picture on the front of the New Yorker to concentrate everybody's minds to say, look, these women aren't making it up. For how long did people say these women were liars?
I think we really do have to credit social media for being the catalyst for these kinds of removals and reactions and rebukes, because otherwise I think it would be more of the same of let's protect our properties and let's protect our interests and effectively blame the victim as wanting the advances or creating the atmosphere for which the protected property would then, you know, misinterpret a signal.
Yeah, I agree with you both that, I mean, that story definitely sharpened focus on Cosby. But I think social media played a huge part too. Like Hannibal Buress's stand-up routine that went viral on social media, that really seemed to jumpstart it all. Actually, I kind of thought something similar would happen for R. Kelly.
Exactly.
So with R. Kelly, is it because he's created such iconic ballads and iconic dance songs that he is still allowed to carry on within the music industry without anybody really holding him to task? And no journalists have tried to, but why is the industry itself not saying anything against R. Kelly? I've not played his records on air for some time because I just think that we have to make a stand, really, and say enough's enough. And that same goes for Roman Polanski. Yes, people are still working with him, people are still standing by him, but we also know, again, despite the change in attitudes, he's still not been ostracised from Hollywood's community. We have to ask ourselves, why is that? And the Weinstein case now gives us a foundation as to why Roman Polanski has not been ostracised from the community, because is that if you make great work, does that mean that you're allowed to do what you feel that you want to do? If you're a creative, does that mean that the art is what we should only be looking at and not the person? And I have spoken to musicians about that, and they say that personal life is nobody's business, the art should count. But that is why so many women are speaking out and men are speaking out now, because they realise they've been part of a culture that is complicit, that condones, that does all of these things. And if we all seize the moment, then actually we can actually finally make a chain and break the hold that that has over people in the industry. We all work in the industry, and we also know that a lot of stuff is meant to be behind closed doors. Well, you know, we have to all kind of hold our hands up and say, that's not acceptable. There is so much need for change. Who is going to really motivate the change? Women still don't hold the power in Hollywood. Women don't hold the power in the music industry. Women don't hold the power in the fashion industry. Do we have to make changes at high levels in order to mean that a change in behaviours really, really gets underway? Or is this all going to blow over in 3 or 4 months' time?
Well, I think that to kind of touch on what both of you guys just said, it's very easy if you look at what's going on in Hollywood and even what's going on in the news, you know, with the Bill O'Reilly situation. It's very easy to say, okay, well, when people have a lot of money, they get away with a lot of shit, you know, and it's about the money. It's about the money. But when you look at Hollywood and these things as a representation of our culture as a whole, I think that's where you get back into the normalization of this type of behavior. We see it at every level. Everybody here has seen it at work to some extent. You've seen it in your social circles to some extent. It's a very normalized way of behaving. To go back to the idea of power, though, to touch on what you just said, Karen, the R. Kelly situation, you're dealing with victims who are powerless. You know, whereas the one thing that kind of doomed Weinstein is when women who had a certain amount of power and they, you know, again, strength in numbers, when they came together and started pointing their finger and raising their hand and saying, this is what happened to me, it couldn't be ignored or couldn't be kind of pushed away. The R. Kelly situation, a lot of those young girls that he abused settled out of court. You know, they took the money, or their families settled out of court, and a lot of their voices probably weren't heard. Unfortunately, this is the way some of these powerful women in Hollywood, their voices are being heard.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear what you're saying, but I think there are people who've been gagged who've now come out, and I think you're right about the the fact that they were younger girls, poor girls who've been paid off. But I'm just surprised that the media still hasn't picked up on that and fed that back in, you know, and gone after that again. And they could have easily put the spotlight on R. Kelly. I just find, and it's not, and R. Kelly's not the only one. I'm saying, you know, also in music, it's just that still hasn't kind of come through, has it? About, you know, the world of music, you know, and how, you know, managers, you know, look at, you know, how managers have treated those women as well. That seems to have still been laid off in the, you know, in some respect.
Right, but isn't historically speaking, though, because I mean, Bill Cosby's, you mentioned the New Yorker cover, when the one thing about that cover, I believe most of his accusers were white women, the gross majority of them. So historically speaking, the cries of black women haven't been heard nearly as loudly as the cries of white women. And let me ask you, wasn't there some controversy? You guys brought up Rose McGowan before. Didn't she make an analogy towards something?
Yeah, I know what you're referring to. Rose McGowan was trying to encourage support from people of color, and she tweeted something like, "What if this was the N-word?" The implication or misinterpretation, depending on how you look at it, was that she was saying people of color will support something to do with race, but they won't support something to do with gender or sexual harassment. And she got pretty much a firestorm backlash against what she was saying. She deleted it and, you know, really clarified it, saying, no, I'm not trying to say that. I just worded it all really badly. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to put the two issues in competition with each other. I'm not saying that people of color right. don't support this, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I think that is what I was trying to think of. And I think, though, to touch back to what Arthur said in the beginning of the segment about where is that line, you know, what's forgiven and what's not forgiven. If everybody can agree that what's happening right now is justified, you know, as far as these men being outed for their behavior and suffering the consequences of that is justified, and hopefully is going to get us to a new place where these types of things don't happen anymore, or at least if they do occur, are immediately, you know, pointed to. But I think, though, for me, I'm looking at what's happening now, and I'm also looking at Mel Gibson. I know, Arthur, you and I mm-hmm. talked about this before, who had that, you know, two outbursts, one anti-Semitic and then another one where he went off on his wife about hoping she gets raped by a pack of niggas, mm-hmm. I think he said. Right. He's making films still. He was on A-list parole for a while, but now he's back. And so not to equate verbal abuse with actual physical attacks, because there is no equation to be made between those two. Obviously, sexual assault is a whole nother level. But if we're going to take a stand against injustice of any kind, don't cherry pick justice. Go all in on that. Don't celebrate Mel Gibson and say you're going to be in a movie with him, and at the same time point at someone else and outing them for their behavior. I think this should be a holistic approach to, we're going to change this culture, period, across the board.
Well, just to play devil's advocate, I mean, isn't, you know, there's a saying, a conciliatory saying that goes like, well, you know, nobody died. That being said, is there a certain point to quicken forgiveness or quicken a second chance? So, for example, Louis C.K. So these allegations against Louis C.K. were published in the New York Times on Thursday. By Friday, he had released a statement on Twitter to say, you know what, this is true. This happened. Nobody's lying. Does Louis C.K. get any kind of credit?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's quite difficult to say that some people's lives haven't been ruined by this. You know, if you're talking rape, if you're talking assault, if you're mm-hmm. blacklisted by the industry you work in, those all have a material impact, which could potentially ruin someone's life, lead to depression, suicide, all kinds of things that no one should mm-hmm. have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And as far as the apologies go, that also depends. Are they sorry they got caught, or are they genuinely sorry for their actions? It's very hard to know. And I think, to be fair, that most people are assuming, certainly on social media, most people are assuming that when someone has apologized here, they're just sorry they got caught, and they're just trying to exercise some sort of damage control.
The only thing I'd say about the fact that he apologised is it gives people a sense of kind of almost like kind of closure, or you know, it verifies what they might have been saying to people for a long time, and it stops that speculation,
right, absolutely,
all those accusations against the victims of the fact that they might have made it up or they misconstrued someone's actions, which is what some of the other people who were accused are kind of saying, you know, this behavior was consensual and all of that. So that's the one thing that you have to give to that person. But you know, I think that's as far as it goes, really, you know, because how are we to know that that person's going to change their behaviour? And also, in these cases, they've ruined people's lives and a lot of people's lives. And the other thing that's not necessarily going to come out is, you know, when people have told them to change their behaviour in the past.
Right.
They chose not to. It's just because now the lid's been blown off so wide that they have to, you know, apologise, just in, you know, in the hope that people aren't going to come after them every day or come after their family every day. You know, I work in, you know, in television. I have worked in television. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anybody who complains about anything, you know, the fear is, and it's not just a fear, the action is you don't work again. And I think people in other industries understand that you might not be promoted. Mm-hmm. You know, but they don't understand that you might never work again because you have spoken out. So it's still that kind of, you know, someone saying, yes, I did this. What's the comeback for them?
Mm-hmm.
What you find is that they might still have had a payoff. You know, they've got a golden handshake to leave. They still may not have lost any of their benefits. So, you know, you can't actually kind of, you know, say to that person, oh, kind of like, well done for speaking out, because it can be just an empty gesture for all we know. Yeah. And I think for the victims, they would feel it's an empty gesture.
Right, right. I guess what we should ask is whether these apologies and admissions of guilt would be made if they were made in a private legal deposition, or if they're only being made right now because the whole issue's been forced out into a public forum.
I mean, the only remote credit I could give anyone in this kind of scenario is if it was not in response to, you know, for example, if Louis, before any kind of revelation even happened, you know, 3-4 years ago or something like that, you know, came out and said, hey, you know what, I have a problem, but I need to speak out about this because this is a problem for me personally and for, you know, my industry as a whole. Now that would be different, and goes to John's point about, you know, if this was in a private deposition. But even then, you know, it's still in defense of, it's still in response to. And I think that overall, that becomes what the real problem is.
I was on the train yesterday when I was reading that story about Louis C.K., and I'm sure if somebody was watching me, they would have been wondering why my eyes were getting so big as I kept reading. Because I'm like, that was some straight wild shit. Like, what does do? What possessed you to ever think that was cool? Now, contrast that, though, with somebody, let's say it's some dude at work who, you know, he hits on his secretary and he knows that she's married and he knows he shouldn't do it. And then she tells him, look, this is how you made me feel. And he's like, you know, I'm so sorry about that. But are we more likely to forgive that dude than we are to forgive, you know, Louis C.K.'s behavior? I think the answer is yes. And I think, though, what's important, though, is that there is a direct line to be drawn from that guy's behavior all the way to Louis C.K. The same thing that made Louis C.K. think he could get away with that, there's a grain of that same sensibility in the dude who's hitting on his secretary. It's a part of our culture. It's what makes men think that it's okay to behave that way. And to be real about it, we've all been brought up in that culture. You know, there's a lot of things that we kind of let slide, or we kind of just shake our head at, and then we move on with our day because it's normal. You know, that's just the way it is, as so many people say. I think what's important in this situation is that we use this moment to look at that and not treat, you know, the bizarre kind of easily, the stuff that you can easily shake your head at, like Louis C.K. is, you know, masturbating in front of women, just, you know, as soon as they come in the room, he's just taking them off his clothes and that's easy to be like, yo, dog, that's, you know, you are completely out of pocket. It's easy to just do that. But I think that what's important is that we look at our everyday surroundings and our everyday activities and the people we know and the places we are, and we see the grain of those things in those situations as well. You know what I'm saying? It's like these things are not unconnected, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's easy to say, oh, it's just money and power. And I agree 100% that that plays a role in it. A lot of these guys, you look at them and you can tell these dudes, before they were popular or before they were famous, before they had some paper, they got no love. You know, they probably went on zero dates. You know, it's like you can just tell that some of these dudes are those type of cats who, once they started getting some money and some paper, they just went buck wild. It's like, now I can do whatever I want. Money and power is not the only reason that these things are happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all say that we know people who have a little bit of money or a little bit of power, mm-hmm. and they don't engage in these kind of activities.
Right.
I also believe that the kind of person that's comfortable doing this sort of thing, they'd be comfortable doing it whether they had $1 million in their bank account or whether they had £20 in their bank account.
I don't know. Would Louis C.K., and I'm sure at this point we'll never find out, but would he have felt comfortable? Let's just take the situation where he had the two comics, the two female comics from Chicago, or in his hotel room. I think it was in Denver or somewhere. And they said they barely had gotten in the door. They barely sat down before dude was like, hey, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do X, Y, Z. And he's taking off his clothes and masturbating in front of them. I don't know if he would have done that when he was broken. You know, nobody knew who he was.
Well, if anything, I think that the money and the power emboldens them to act on these impulses that they already had. Like, I'm sure these guys weren't paragons of feminism when they didn't have the millions and they didn't have the power. Like, maybe their misdeeds when rich are proportionate to their misdeeds when poor.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine that that type of person would exhibit the same sort of misdeeds throughout their life.
I agree with you, John. I do think there are some proportional elements as far as probably the way he did treat women before and after he was rich and famous. I do think, though, his fame gave him the, you know, the even the courage, if for lack of a better term, because that's not the right word, but the audacity to do what he did.
The behavior of some of these people does go right back to when they started out in the business, and this has been proved. You know, even with Cosby, there's elements on record of what he said. With Savile, before he even became a star, there's now it's now been revealed that there was an issue. And sometimes when I, you know, when females in the business talk about somebody once they've made it through, they'll talk about when that person started off at the beginning and their behaviour was inappropriate. So, and because they're a guy, it's allowed, mm-hmm. it's been allowed to happen, because at first people pass it off as, oh, it's just youth and they're just kind of like silly and inexperienced. And then suddenly they catapulted to high positions quite quickly. The power has then gone to the head, and then they do, you know, they just feel that they've got free rein to behave even more outrageously than they did before. So it's picking up on Jahan's point that, were they like that at the beginning? I do think that those seeds of behaviour were there, and that it wasn't ironed out, because the industry has always thought that's the way it is. There's a casting couch, you know, hence the fact that, you know, the accusations against some of these people, they don't go back, you know, to the point where they were actually appointed the CEO of a company. They go back three decades.
Again, I agree with you, because to my point, you know, that type of behavior is not just, you know, cannot just be put on money and power. There's a reason that he felt comfortable. And let's be honest, at some point, if this stays within the news cycle, if what's going on right now continues to be in the news cycle, somebody is going to point at a woman.
Right. You know, that's what I was going to get to.
Hollywood producer, yeah. And say, she did this to me. You know, she did this to a man. But let's head that one off right now. If that happens, even if it's one or two, that does not in any way kind of balance, you know, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. level the playing field.
Sure.
Because the gross majority of this happening is men, yeah, abusing their power against women. And that, to me, is reflective of our patriarchal society. When that comes out, you know, that a woman has done this, to me, that's an anomaly. That's not the norm.
There was a movie in 1994 called Disclosure with Demi Moore and Michael Douglas that explored that same scenario, where a powerful businesswoman who was a former lover of Douglas's, and also at a competing company, wanted made sexual advances toward him, and then later for business strategy sued him for sexual harassment. And exploited.
Yeah, and I'm not, if something like that comes out, I'm not saying that the person, the man who was a victim of that, shouldn't be listened to or shouldn't, you know, shouldn't get it, get his own form of justice. I'm not saying that at all. All I'm saying is that when and if that happens,
right, it's not like pointed at it's not like a gimme.
This isn't a problem of patriarchy. It's a problem of power and money. No, I completely disagree with that.
I mean, what is justice? What's just as a result of this? I mean, Isaac, you had brought up, or you had mentioned justice in your last set of comments. I mean, is it jail? Is it loss of freedom? Loss of wealth? Is it a combination? Is it a sliding scale?
Well, I think I was going to, that's what I was going to ask
and
you.
And is the justice for us as the society?
Yeah, and that's my point. I think I'll ask a question. Well, first of all, to answer your question, to me, I'm not as concerned about justice against one individual. I'm concerned about the victims getting justice.
That's what I'm,
you know, that's what I'm concerned about. And then also I'm concerned about eradicating this culture, you know, eradicating that part of our culture. That would be, to me, that'd be the ultimate justice. You know, Arthur, you said something earlier, and I think Karen, you mentioned it too, that made me think about how, and it's messed up to say this, but it's so realistic. It's just reality of how fickle and how a short attention span the news cycle has. So the reason I think, you know, this continues to stay in the news, and it's been, you know, what, 2-3 months now, is because there's fresh allegations that seem to come out every week. You know, somebody else, you know, somebody else is now, you know, the person is, you know, that's on the hot seat. So I think as long as that continues, then this is going to be, you know, on front page. But the reality is that with R. Kelly, I think one of the, you know, we've touched on many of the reasons why he's not being thrown at, you know, he's not on the front page this week or last week or whenever. But I think one of the reasons also is because there's no new allegations. There's nothing new to that story, to add to that story. And I think that the news industry thrives on, you know, putting, you know, fresh faces on the front page, fresh stories.
But there's that sorry to interrupt, Isaac, but the story about him that he's now kind of leading a cult, that's fresh story.
Right, that was I think a few months ago, yeah, that he has a harem, basically, of women. And I think the police did investigate that, and none of the women, you know, would say that they were there by, you know, by force or whatever. So that story, like, quickly dissolved. But I agree with you, that was a new element of his story. But by and large, I think if we stop seeing allegations, you know, Louis C.K. was this week, who is it going to be next week? If we stop seeing people come forth and we stop seeing new faces, you know, 5 or 6 months from now, this is not going to be, you know, news. And that's sad.
Film is a little more abstracted. And what I mean by that is it's easy to say, well, you know, I'm not going to purchase any more. I can't do anything about what I've already purchased, but I'm not going to purchase any more R. Kelly music. I'm not going to purchase, you know, I'm not going to watch The Cosby Show anymore. But with Weinstein's case, it's much more of a hydra. I mean, this man has been involved in so many movies that so many of us sitting around these microphones enjoy. We'd have to clear out all of our Quentin Tarantino films. There's The English Patient. There's The King's Speech. Both of those are Academy Award winners. Apollo 18, Silver Linings Playbook. There is Fruitvale Station. He had some production involvement in with that film as well. It's like, how do we react to what we may personally now feel about this man?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think it depends. Boycotting a movie or TV show or taking it off the air, it can have the justifiable effect on the guilty person, but it can also have an unintended negative impact on the innocent people who worked on it. Take The Cosby Show, for example. To my knowledge, that's been basically taken off the air now. So that affects Bill Cosby, good.
Right, right.
But it also affects the innocent people who worked on it, the writers, the co-producers, the other performers, all of whom may have been relying on those residual checks as an income stream. Is it fair that his actions have now impacted them, you know, financially, impacted their families? No, it's probably not fair. But at this stage, the show's complete. It's not like they can replace him or reshoot his scenes. So, you know, what do you do? Yeah, it's difficult.
But I think, Arthur, we've always had the, when it comes to, you know, who we're going to allow, you know, if we're going to partake in their, you know, the things that they produce, or if we're going to cut them out of our lives. With art, we've always had that excuse, you know, it's art. You know, so it's like, I separate this from the artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've always had that excuse when it comes to singers or when it comes to actors. But it, the thing that's interesting to me about what's happening now is it's gone beyond art. You know, it started with somebody who technically is not an artist. You know, Harvey Weinstein is a producer. He's on the business end of it. So that that right there can give people, you know, put them in a perplexing situation, because it's like, it's not, you know, he's not the artist, so I'm not, I really can't separate him from this in the same way that I would give myself an excuse to separate, you know, R. Kelly or Michael Jackson or whoever from the accusations leveled against them. So, and this has gone further. It's gone into politics now. It's gone into the business arena now. So that's what's interesting me about what's happening now, is that we don't have that excuse that we have when it comes to, that we've used for art.
In the same way as people didn't want to turn the spotlight on Hollywood, you know, music is, you know, is kind of obvious thing to say, but it's a soundtrack to people's lives. Do people really want to blow the lid on that? Do newspapers really want to blow the lid on it? I don't think so. And I think it's hard for people to understand what really goes on behind these situations. People are questioning how women or how young men find themselves in these situations. And it's hard to say, you know, I do interviews, you are asked to go to hotel rooms. It sounds ridiculous, but that's just because somebody's in a city for one day. You all know you do. That's sometimes how it has to be, but the general public question you for doing that. And so, you know, or the general public questions someone for being 16 and being attracted to a 24-year-old. It's always, you know, the onus is always on what's wrong with that girl or that woman for being put in that situation or for feeling that way. That it's not, the reverse isn't often thought about. Why is that man going out with someone half their age? You know, why is that man not behaving like a boss in that respect? That question isn't often put out in the arena, is it? It's always in the reverse. It's always, how did the woman get themselves into that position? And also, why did they keep quiet? And that's the same thing comes up again and again and again. And that's the thing that we have to question. As people keep saying, you have to believe the women who are telling the stories and stop questioning them.
Right, right.
All right. And that's a wrap for the third episode of Snobs on Film. Snobsonfilm.com is where we can be found online, as well as Instagram and Twitter. Our handles for both, Snobs on Film. Yeah, there was a film in 94 called Disclosure with Michael Keaton and Demi Moore that explored that same kind
of thing.
Michael Douglas. Who did I say? Michael Keaton. Crichton? Yeah.
Michael Jackson. Michael Jordan.
Right.
Michael
right.
J. Fox. Michelangelo.
Yeah, I want to thank Isaac, Karen, and Jahan for joining me today, and tell the people where you can be found.
You can catch me on Twitter at Kazgabay, Kazgabay. Also on Instagram. You can hear me on the BBC Radio Player if you go to The People, and you can hear the radio show I co-present, 2-hour radio show every Sunday. You can also find me on Mixcloud, and if I get my act together, you'll find me on SoundCloud too.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Isaac Perry. That's ISAACPERRY. And you can learn a little bit more about me at isaacperry.com.
And you can find me at Jahan's Dream on Twitter and Instagram. I won't spell it.
And of course, my name is Arthur, and I am on Twitter. My handle is Arthur, which is ARRTHUR. And we invite you to subscribe to the show in iTunes or Google Play or your favorite podcast aggregator. Thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you soon.